morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today's program is about human rights, which are once again in questionable and very controversial contention provoked by the current President of the United States, who has withdrawn participation in the UN's Human Rights Council while simultaneously separating children from refugees and migrant families, and as well by his racial, religious, and gender bigotries. My reading is from the 5-volume Oxford University Encyclopedia of Human Rights, 2009 edition, specifically A History of Human Rights by Paul Gordon Loren. So buckle up your ear belts. It's going to be a fast read. The history of human rights is as complex as it is fascinating. It centers upon the long struggle to realize the worth of human beings in the face of prejudice, discrimination, exploitation, oppression, enslavement, persecution, torture, and extermination. As such, it is a history that spans centuries of time, diverse cultures and places, ranging from Asia to Europe and from the Middle East to the Americas and Africa. It is a history that raises profound, difficult, and universal questions about human life as lived individually and collectively, and about the relationship between duties and rights. It is a history in which the language and terminology of rights possess ambiguities that mean different things to different people and vary in accordance with context. For this reason, it is a history of controversy over definitions, meanings, origins, applicability, and methods. Moreover, it is a history full of paradox. The forces of historical change on behalf of human rights have included individual men and women of vision and action, religious belief, philosophical thought, technology, upheaval in war and revolution, and atrocities that have stirred the human conscience. Yet these very same forces have been used by those who have opposed human rights and have perpetuated human rights violations. These many complexities of time, culture, place, subject, language, controversy, and paradox help to explain why the history of human rights has never been tidy, precise, or steady. There is no straight path, direct line, or unbroken chain of development or progress. Instead, we find fits and starts, twists and turns, advances and setbacks, active support and determined resistance, and achievements and failures. At any given point, there are elements of both change and continuity, with the evolution of human rights being determined by what was possible within a particular historical context. It is to that context that we now turn. In order to appreciate the advances made in human rights, it is important to recognize that most of human history is an account not of rights, but rather of abuses. Over the years and in many countries, the overwhelming majority of all human beings who ever lived and died did so under some form of what are now regarded as human rights violations. The few governed the many, for traditional, hierarchical, and often brutal authoritarian governments ruled the earth. Human bondage was common. Slavery and serfdom treated individual men and women as property rather than as people, and these practices were widely accepted as the norm and as part of the natural order. Prejudice and discrimination prevailed. Half the human race, for example, suffered solely because of their gender, as females experienced abuses in patriarchal, male-dominated societies, expecting them to know their proper place. Many suffered as a result of the color of their skin, discovering that racial distinctions often provided the badge that distinguished masters from slaves, conquerors from the conquered, or killers from victims in genocide. Others suffered exploitation because of their economic or social class or caste. Still others suffered harsh intolerance and brutal persecution as a result of their religious beliefs, political persuasion, nationality, language, or ethnicity, among other forms of difference. Torture was common and sanctioned by law. Moreover, virtually all government leaders regarded their treatment of subjects as being within their own domestic jurisdiction and exclusive sovereignty. Whatever international law existed applied to states, not people, and to their external, not domestic affairs. Thus, these leaders understood that they could act as they wished without outside scrutiny, interference, or standards that might hold them accountable for their abuses, especially if committed within their own country. This extensive and entrenched history of abuse and impunity was created, maintained, and defended by long tradition, determined vested interests, strong resistance to change, and the force of existing law. As such, it possessed formidable power. Any significant efforts to change or transform its practices would require the mobilization of many extraordinary people and forces working on behalf of human rights over a considerable period of time. The first steps in this direction began with the earliest thoughts and beliefs about the value of human life, what it means to be truly human, and whether people bear any responsibility for the well-being of others. Given these kinds of profound, universal, and enduring issues, it is not surprising that some of the first significant philosophies concerning human rights would come from religious traditions. Virtually all of the world's great religions, despite their many differences, stress the worth and dignity of human life, the common kinship of humankind, and the responsibility that believers have to show compassion, to treat others as they would like to be treated, and to care for those who suffer. These early forms of religious belief may not have created legal or personal rights, but they established traditions and manifested principles that would inform later rights developments. Hinduism's ancient texts of the Vedas and Upanishads, some of which were written over 3,000 years ago, for example, instruct believers to respect the sacredness of life, to adhere to their duty to practice charity, and to act on behalf of justice for others. The scriptures of Judaism similarly speak about common humanity, laws of ethical behavior to protect against abuse, freeing the oppressed, and practicing social justice. The teachings of Buddhism, founded by Siddhartha Gautama approximately 2,500 years ago, stress human equality, the worth of each person, and the necessity for its followers to practice loving kindness and compassion toward all beings. The life, ministry, and teachings of Jesus, as indicated by the Sermon on the Mount and the parable of the Good Samaritan in the New Testament of the Bible, emphasize the responsibility of Christians to love others as themselves, to care for outcasts, and to alleviate human suffering. Muhammad's revelations of the 7th century, as recorded in the Quran, similarly address the duty of those who believe in Islam to practice justice, mercy, and charity, particularly toward the most vulnerable in society. These earliest of religious concepts of individual worth and duty toward others, it is important to remember, all emerged centuries ago in traditional hierarchical and patriarchal societies that far predated the printing press, nation-states, and modern concepts of individual rights based upon precise philosophical, legal, or subtly nuanced and carefully articulated definitions of rights discourse known in our own day. As such, they taught orientations of spirit, habits of the heart, attitudes toward other people, and impulses that would evolve through time. Although their followers often fell far short of actually practicing their professed principles, these religious traditions nevertheless helped establish early ideals and normative standards concerning the worth of human beings and a moral sense of responsibility to care for and protect others. In this way, responsibilities and rights came to be interrelated and correlative concepts. For a duty is something that one owes to someone else, and that person in turn has a right to claim that duty. This is the reason that many human rights campaigners throughout history have openly declared that the inspiration and motivation for their efforts originated from their strongly held religious convictions. But thoughts about what would eventually be called human rights came from many sources, and religious belief provided only one of these. Others came from ethical values, originating in moral and political philosophy, derived not so much from divine revelation, but from secular inquiry and human reason. Over the course of many centuries, philosophers from many diverse locations and cultural traditions also wrestled with difficult questions about the worth of human beings, responsibilities toward those who suffer, rights, and the universality of moral precepts, justice, and how government leaders should treat their people. Through time, their teachings and writings eventually came to contribute, each in their own way, to the concept that all people possess certain rights that naturally came to them simply as a result of being human. Some of the earliest of these philosophical contributions to human rights came from ancient China. Nearly 24 centuries ago, for example, the Chinese philosopher Mo Zi founded the most school of moral philosophy, emphasizing the universal duty to practice and all-embracing respect for other human beings worldwide. He was followed shortly thereafter by Kongqi, or Confucius, who taught that all humans naturally share a common humanity, that they possess worth or moral force, and that each has a responsibility to not harm others. The Confucian sage Mengzi, or Mencius, took these concepts even further by maintaining that it was the responsibility of government leaders to nurture the natural or inherent qualities of dignity and worth in each individual through benevolence and moral behavior. If leaders failed to do this, he argued, they forfeited their legitimacy to govern, and people had a right to overthrow them. Another Chinese philosopher, Zunzi, emphasized the same point. He declared that nothing was more effective in eradicating strife and realizing justice than the recognition of what he called individual rights. Philosophers in other areas of the world also contributed to the slowly emerging concept of rights. The ancient Indian philosopher and leader Kautilya, for example, wrote in the Arthashastra that the individual worth of each person gave them certain inherent rights that required even kings to respect them. Government leaders, he insisted, had an obligation to establish a rule of law that promoted justice by treating people benevolently, fairly, and with respect. His philosophy, along with growing influence of Buddhist religious principles, heavily influenced the celebrated reign of the Indian king Asoka in the 3rd century BCE, who enacted laws stressing justice and guaranteeing the rights of freedom of worship and freedom of thought. A further contribution to this principle of the law as a check against the arbitrary use or abuse of power was given by Hammurabi, the king of Babylon, whose famous Hammurabi Code of 1760 BCE provided legal protections for certain kinds of rights. Many years later, in 539 BCE, the founder of the Persian Empire, Cyrus the Great, promulgated the Charter of Cyrus, sometimes described by its more ardent champions as the world's first charter of human rights, is that it specifically addressed certain rights of liberty, security, freedom of movement, and religious belief, prohibited slavery and oppression, protected the right of property, and guaranteed the right of religious freedom. Significant contributions came from the West as well. Philosophers in ancient Greece and Rome began to write about what would be called natural law and natural rights. Following in the footsteps of his teacher, Socrates, for example, the Greek philosopher Plato wrote in his Republic that a universal law of nature with eternal standards of moral justice existed as elements of an unchanging natural order above and beyond the interests of a particular state or ruler, and he felt that human conduct toward others should be in harmony with this law. On this basis, he opposed the institution of slavery and, unusual for his time, insisted that women should have access to the same education as men. His student, Aristotle, went on to write Politics, arguing that human nature and virtue can best be perfected when people treat other people not necessarily in accordance with the existing laws of men, but in ways that are just by nature. And that's a quote. Further elaboration came from the doctrines of the Stoics and the famous Roman statesman, lawyer, and philosopher Marcus Tullius Cicero. In his books, Republic, On Duty, and especially On the Laws, he argued that this natural law with its obligations to follow a standard of justice was valid for all nations and all times, and that's a quote, that it bound all humans together, and that it imposed a universal duty or responsibility to respect the inherent worth of each person. These early religious doctrines and philosophical theories that emerged in different ages and from different parts of the world all would eventually make significant contributions to the history of human rights. But initially and for centuries, their focus would remain largely on moral responsibilities and duties toward others rather than on what are now described as legal rights. And their visions and theories would remain expressions of ideals rather than practical realities. Any further articulation of the concepts and their critical transformation into practice would require monumental political, economic, social, and intellectual upheavals. Such changes began to occur in Europe with particular force. The barons of England, for example, claimed that their ruler, King John, had failed to meet his obligations under natural law and successfully forced him to sign the Magna Carta in 1215. on June 15, 1215. By placing limits on the powers of royal power, this development laid the basis for constitutionalism or limited government and established the foundation for certain individual rights, at least for the elite. Then the gradual decline of feudalism eventually gave way to the free markets of capitalism, the concept of owning private property and being free from economic bondage, and an emerging middle class eventually interested in individual freedom. The Renaissance of the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries helped to spread ideas about the right to be free from censorship and intolerance by emphasizing human reason, individual expression, intellectual freedom, and worldly experience. At this time, Christine de Pizan dared to argue in her book, The City of Ladies, in 1405, that any discussion of natural law and natural rights needed to include women as well. The Reformation and emergence of Protestantism in the 15th and 16th centuries made their own contributions to rights discourse by emphasizing spiritual emancipation, individual conscience, the freedom of religious belief, and political and social reform. In doing so, all these forces combined to mark a shift in natural law from duties, often religious, to rights, understood as having a religious or secular basis. Developments during the 17th century continued this momentum. Horrified by the excesses and abuses of his times, the famous Dutch diplomat and jurist Hugo Grotius, often credited as the father of modern international law, wrote extensively in his Rights of War and Peace in 1625 that natural law derived from God and nature universally endowed all human beings with certain natural rights of protection and just and equal treatment, irrespective of any religious or civil status. Only 3 years later, the English promulgated the Petition of Right, which spoke of diverse rights and liberties that directly challenged the absolutist claims of the monarch. This was followed in the wake of turmoil, revolution, and civil war by the Habeas Corpus Act of 1679. This act established the right to be brought before a court of law in person, and then came the landmark legislation known as the English Bill of Rights of 1689, which spoke forcefully about indubitable rights, involving limited monarchy, representative government, free elections, freedom of speech, religious toleration, trial by jury, and prohibitions against cruel and unusual punishment. At precisely the same time, the most pivotal philosopher of the century, John Locke, published his Letter Concerning Toleration in 1689, and his particularly influential Second Treatise of Government in 1690. In these texts, he forcefully argued that all humans possess certain natural rights long before any man-made government or civil society was ever created. These included life, liberty, and the right to own property. People formed governments to protect these natural rights, not to surrender them. Locke insisted that people were justified in resisting oppression if any government failed in this obligation and violated these rights. These provocative ideas became even more powerfully shaped and developed at the hands of philosophers from the intellectual movement of the 18th century known as the Enlightenment. Writers with a growing confidence in a universal order, human reason, and the perfectibility of the human condition, like Francis Hutcheson in A Short Introduction to Moral Philosophy, Jean-Jacques Marquis in The Principles of Natural Law of 1747, Montesquieu in his Spirit of the Laws of 1748, Adam Smith in Theory of Moral Sentiments of 1759, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, whose birthday is today, June 28, 1712, in The Social Contract of 1762, Voltaire in his Critique of Toleration of 1763, Cesar Beccaria in his Hard-Hitting on Crimes and Punishments of 1764, and Abbé Guillaume Raynal in his Thoughtful Philosophical and Political History of 1770, among many others, all regarded themselves as shedding light on the darkness of the past by seeking to liberate the individual from traditional dogmatism, authority, intolerance, special privilege, hierarchy, and abuse. Added to these voices were those of the emerging political publicists such as Thomas Paine, the author of Common Sense in 1776. Together, they spoke variously and without particular precision of natural rights as the rights of man, human rights, and the rights of humanity. If natural law established certain universal principles of justice and inalienable or natural rights, they reasoned, then all people were entitled to claim them simply because they were human. As they articulated their ideas, they came to believe that these rights were universal and included such elements as the right to life and property, liberty, religious toleration, the rule of law, due process, justice, representative government, free elections, protection against torture or cruel and unusual punishment, and political and social reform. From the perspective of the 18th century, these ideas of individual rights directly challenged the claims of kings, the practices of absolutist governments, and the power of those entrenched in positions of privilege. As such, they could not help but be revolutionary. The Enlightenment's contribution to the history of human rights received significant political expression in the form of two major revolutions in the second half of the 18th century. The first of these was the American Revolutionary War from 1775 to 1783. Inspired by the ideas of natural rights, Thomas Jefferson took his quill pen in hand and wrote the Declaration of Independence in 1776. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, quote unquote. Jefferson declared that it was precisely the failure of the British king to respect these rights that justified rebellion. Ultimate success, of course, created the opportunity for the Americans to adopt the U.S. Constitution in 1787 and thereby establish a new form of government based upon the consent of the governed. Although the Constitution confirmed the political rights to vote and to hold public office, it did not address any other rights. To correct this problem, and fearing possible abuses against individual rights from both the state and from the tyranny of the majority, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, known collectively as the Bill of Rights, were ratified in 1791. They provided legal guarantees for a number of important civil rights, including the right of freedom of speech and religious belief, freedom of the press, the right to be protected against unreasonable searches and seizures, the right to be protected from a cruel and unusual punishment, and the right to a trial by jury. The American Revolution was followed by the French Revolution, which broke out in 1789. Lashing out against a despotic monarch, a rigid political and social system of privilege and power known as the ancient regime, and hunger, among other factors, the revolutionary leaders of France formed a new National Assembly. Within days, its deputies adopted the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, the early drafts of which were written by Jefferson. This declaration forcefully spoke in universal terms of the natural, inalienable, and sacred rights of man. Men are born and remain free and equal in rights, read the document, and it asserted that the very purpose of government was to protect these rights. Further language enumerated the political rights of voting and holding office, as well as certain civil rights dealing with the toleration of opinion and religious belief, freedom of expression, and the protection against arbitrary arrest and punishment. Then, in order to give these provisions legal force, the text was adopted as the preamble of the new Constitution. In attempting to assess the importance of the French Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, the famous British historian Lord Acton described it as a single document that was more powerful than libraries and stronger than the armies of Napoleon. The ferment caused by these two revolutions and the tumultuous events surrounding them stimulated other major developments in the history of human rights as well. They prompted Thomas Paine, who had personal experience with revolutionary leaders in both America and France, for example, to publish in 1791 his passionate and provocative Rights of Man, which immediately became a bestseller. He included economic as well as civil and political rights. Drawing upon the contributions of religious belief and philosophical theory of natural law and natural rights, and explaining the relationship between rights and duties, Paine provided the rationale of the age of democratic revolutions, resistance to authority, and the extension of human rights. Inspired by the language of rights, however ambiguous or ill-defined, from the American and French revolutions, Slaves in Haiti rose up during the same year in armed revolt against their white masters, demanding freedom and equality. At exactly the same time, two pioneers emerged in the historical struggle for women's rights. One of these was a self-educated butcher's daughter in Paris named Olympe de Gouges, who issued her own Declaration of the Rights of Women and Female Citizen, declaring that women are born free and insisting that they receive rights in full measure and equal measure with men. The other was Mary Wollstonecraft, who published A Vindication of the Rights of Women in 1792, demanding justice and rights, in her words, for one half of the human race. Such voices as these continue to ask questions of fundamental importance throughout the history of human rights. What precisely are these rights, and who exactly can claim them? Advancing the rights of some raises the issues and rights of others. Despite the ringing language of natural, universal, and equal rights and the considerable progress made during the course of the American and French revolutions, for example, the fact remained that the majority of people, even in these two countries, still were not regarded as fully human or as truly deserving of certain rights. Women, workers with no property, domestic or indentured servants, racial minorities, slaves, indigenous peoples, and children were either largely or entirely excluded. It was easier for some to accept the proposition that human rights might be natural than to acknowledge that they also might be universal and equal. This sharp contrast between the theory and the logic of universal rights on the one hand, and the actual practice of severe limitations on the other, in fact, sparked intense conflict and an unprecedented discourse about rights. The resulting struggle would profoundly shape the history of human rights that followed. It continues to do so for gays, the disabled, untouchables, terror suspects, and others who remain victims of various forms of prejudice and hatred. This history presents a profound legacy of lasting importance in understanding human rights. It reveals that human rights, however named or described, have a record that can be traced back over many countries, cultures, experiences, and centuries. It shows that positive developments in the area of human rights did not suddenly happen at some precise historical point, but that they evolved slowly, unsteadily, and incompletely depending upon what was possible within the particular historical context. Throughout history, the process has never been consistent or steady, and the visions, versions, meanings, and applications of rights have always been sharply contested. It demonstrates that changes on behalf of rights have resulted from many kinds of historical forces, ranging from individuals to religious or philosophical thought, stressing moral persuasion, to the physical violence and pain of wars, revolutions, and other atrocities. It attests to the remarkable and at times even revolutionary advances in human rights. At the same time, it shows that normative aspirations and rhetoric have not always been accompanied by behavioral reality. The contradictions of standards and double standards exist. Their resistance persists, and that some abuses still continue in one form or another. It is precisely this legacy that influenced and influences the rights, the organizations, the situations, and the personalities that appear in virtually all of the other entries in this Encyclopedia of Human Rights. This is Michael McCusker. Happy Independence Day, which is the same day in 1848 that Marx and Engels published the Communist Manifesto. Also, Walt Whitman's self-published Leaves of Grass in 1855 and Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll in 1865. Read all three after you reread the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, every true American intends to do.